Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help find you a winning formula for success. You'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to The Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me today is my good friend, Alex Spears. Alex, what up?
What's up, Andrew? Happy Wednesday.
Ooh, it's a great Wednesday. The Thunder played a really, really rough game against the Mavs. Some may call it unwatchable.
No.
On Monday night. But one step closer to the goal, Alex. Baby steps to the goal.
Yeah, Luka and Porzingis. Man, Porzingis looked pretty good in that game. That was the first game where I felt like Moses Brown had a matchup that like was just not working for him at all.
It was a horrible... Really, any big they put in there, really outside of Boban, it was just like, there's no way. Even like Nikola Melli, who's new to that team. I don't even know if he had played for them previously at all, if that was his first game, but... Like, it's just any stretch big is a bad matchup for Moses.
Yeah, but even, like, inside, like, Porzingis was getting whatever he wanted. Oh. And then on the defensive end, those, like, back-to-back, I'm hesitate to even call them blocks because he was just, like, it didn't even jump. He just, like,
right, it was just like, nope, you're back down, yeah. Both times. And it was just like, oh, no. No, Moses. I almost yelled for him in the building. Just like, Moses, no. Yeah, that was rough. But big congrats to Moses on getting a contract, and big congrats to the Thunder for giving him a contract that is the most team-friendly contract ever. What are your thoughts on Moses and his contract, Al?
I mean, I hesitate to even call it a contract because it's more of like it's a contract for this season, and then beyond that, it's an option for the Thunder to do a contract if they want to. But like it's nothing beyond this season. Like nothing is guaranteed. So it is just them rewarding him for this season. It's prorated. So I think it ends up being right around like $500,000 for this year. He's going to get more with that salary floor bump.
Yeah, for real.
Beyond that, and it's weird because it is the exact same deal as the Lu Dort deal, except in the case of Lu Dort, we knew there was like zero chance the Thunder is ever going to get out of this contract. Like the Thunder are going to be in this contract for the full 4 years.
Yep.
And I don't know. I mean, I expect that Moses Brown will be on this team next year. But I also don't know if you need both Tony Bradley and Moses Brown on a modern NBA team. So I could see them only going with one of those and the end of the season kind of being a tryout for both of them. So I thought it was cool that he got a quote-unquote contract, but it's really not a contract. It's an option to have a contract, potentially.
I mean, yeah, it's a contract, a team-friendly, team-option-littered contract is what it is. But you know what? He didn't have anything resembling that before. So
that's true. It's awesome
credit,
for him.
Credit to him.
It honestly just makes the Lu Dort deal seem like even crazier. Because like Lu Dort is someone who deserves guaranteed money. We knew it last year. Guaranteed money for 4 years. Easy. He deserves that. And he's probably going to get it. Like they're not going to waive Lu Dort or whatever. But just in comparison, it's like, wow, they got the same deal.
Yeah. And it seems to be the deal that they give two-way guys.
Yeah.
Like no matter what. And I don't know, man. I think it's fine. And the Lu Dort one was a little bit different because he played a position of need and a position that you know every NBA team will need moving forward. Like, traditional big guy isn't going to step out and shoot it at all. Like, that, there are lots of those guys that don't make it in the league just because of that.
Right. Yeah, there are limited minutes for those type of players. So we'll see what happens, though. He's going to get a ton of minutes. It seems like it'll be him and Bradley taking those center minutes the rest of the way, which is kind of interesting for Roby to see what happens with Roby's minutes, because earlier in the season, Roby seemed like he was playing all of his minutes at center, and it just doesn't seem like that's going to be an option, at least for the rest of this season.
No, he'll play forward. I still think he's best as like a backup small ball center.
But, yeah.
He played well the other night for the most part. Thoughts on Al Horford not playing for the Thunder maybe ever again?
Yeah. I mean, from a Thunder fan perspective, like, I don't care that much. It does. And we've talked about this in our group chat that, like, that is the one trade where if I could go back and undo a trade from this past offseason, I think it would be the Horford trade. I just still don't really see the point, given what we got back. I mean, that trade significantly helped out the Sixers. It gave them so much flexibility going forward, and they got Danny Green, and they only had to give up one protected first-round pick that has come, I think, is a 2025.
They got Teo, too.
That is true. That is true. We did get Teo. But
is Teo not enough for you, bro?
He is. I feel like we could have gotten Teo another way than taking on this contract that, like, okay, so we're not even going to play him. We can't trade him. There were no rumors about Al Horford being involved in a trade a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just didn't like that deal, and I feel like it's looking worse in retrospect. Now, they could flip him this summer and for anything, literally anything, and I'll be happy. And it really doesn't matter because, like we've talked about with their books, like, you could have another giant contract on this team and it really wouldn't matter. But I don't know. I don't like the idea of teams just having guys just not playing. Just go home, do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters.
He's not like Josh Smithing the team where it's just like, go away, stay away, you know, go home. He's staying with the team. He's working out. He's on the bench. He's doing all that stuff.
And he's clearly been a good influence on a lot of the younger guys. I mean, he's been
definitely.
He seems to be involved, like, emotionally with the team. It's not like he's a loner, you know, like over in the corner by himself every game, just stewing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, like, this was never going to be his final stop, right? Like, this is never going to be it. When it became...
Is it not? Is it not going to be his final stop, Andrew?
No. It won't be. It definitely will not be. I mean, the intent of sitting him is so that you can get him to next season without getting hurt, right? So that he can be on another team.
I mean we could have done that with Chris Paul.
What do you mean, sit Chris Paul?
Yeah, so he doesn't get hurt. I mean, what is that argument?
Yeah, but they were competitive, and a lot. This was all pushed forward by Shea's injury. If Shea's not hurt, I bet you Al plays until the last 15 games of the season, and then they sit him then. But without Shea, I mean, that, like, look at that. Look just what happened on Monday. I mean, you want to risk his injury so that he can play with those guys? Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Like I said, I don't really care. But it brings up all the issues with, like, the current buyout market. Yeah. And I just feel like there's a lot of things going on in the NBA right now that I don't like. And
yeah,
I'm worried about the long-term future of small markets. And this is, like, such a tiny... like, example of it, but just with all the buyouts coming, and I feel like the buyouts are going to get better. They're going to get more and more significant in terms of, like, the quality. I mean, I don't think this year feels like an outlier with Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge and Andre Drummond, but I feel like that's going to become the norm over these next couple years. And teams are going to be less willing to trade for those big contracts for veterans, which I include Al Horford as part of that, because they're just going to think, well, all these guys are just going to get released into the buyout market. There's really no reason for us to trade for these guys. I mean, nope.
I mean, like all the guys this year is all situational, though. Like every single one of them. Like
it's always going to be situational. We're not playing Al Horford. Isn't that situational?
Definitely.
I just don't see why a team would ever trade for him. Like, and I know that OKC wouldn't buy him out, or at least we'll say that until it would happen. But like, why not just wait? Like, why give up anything of value to take on that contract? Like, there's going to be these buyout guys now, it feels like, every single year, because these contracts are getting so big that it becomes so much more difficult to even formulate a trade for them. I mean, you couldn't even come up with a trade for Blake Griffin. Like, his contract was so big.
But you look at Blake and LaMarcus on their teams, like, they just visibly were not helping their team. Al is still a helpful player. I think people can see that. Like, LaMarcus was not.
They can see it. He's not going to play for, like, the next 9 months.
But when he played, he was helpful. He was a helpful player. The reason the Thunder are sitting Al Horford is way different than, like, Drummond or LaMarcus or even Blake.
I don't disagree. I just think that the end game, I wouldn't be surprised if it's the exact same, which is that, oh, we still can't find a deal for this guy.
It could be. But, like, you look at even the Pelicans. Like, the Pelicans found a deal for J.J. Redick. You know? Like,
yeah.
They found a way to trade him. I mean, Sam has proven time and time again, like, he's a much more creative general manager than most everybody when it comes to trades. The dude traded Carmelo Anthony, for crying out loud. You know? So, I believe that there will be a trade, and there could be teams out there saying, hey, yeah, we'll trade for him in the summer, but I don't want to take on the rest of his bloated deal when I don't know that he can really help us all that much the rest of this season. Like, we'll take on the rest of his deal in the summer, but not now, kind of thing. And you're not going to get tremendous value for him, but you could get, I think you could get something.
I mean, so I'm looking up his age. I'm trying to figure out how old he is going to be when he is in prime trading age. So he's going to be 35 mm-hmm. on June 3rd. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. Paying $24 million or whatever it is for a 35-year-old center. Putting together a trade to reach the money at that point, I feel like is going to be difficult.
It'll be easier with the cap space that is available this summer for a lot of teams.
Yeah.
It'll be easier.
I mean, similar to like the Russ deal, like I do think it's going to take a perfect storm of like a team missing out, a team needing a center.
Yeah.
And specifically a team needing a center who sees themselves as competitive.
Sure.
To make a deal work.
Yeah. I have little doubt with this front office that they could, that, you know, they're going to pull it off. They're not like the Pistons where they have like waived and stretched like 1,000 players in the last, you know, like 6 months, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're not. And I also don't know that I don't know if the Thunder are an ownership group that would say, yeah, we'll just eat that money, you know?
Yeah, so. I mean, if they did, you would think it wouldn't happen till that last year. However, we're going to keep seeing like bigger and bigger buyouts. I mean, we're going to see some just like crazy buyout. I mean, like the Rockets, for instance, I feel like John Wall is holding back their development, and it doesn't seem like that big of a deal right now because they don't have that many young guys.
I was going to say, who are they developing?
But when they start adding young guys to this team and you're still having to give John Wall like 35 minutes a night, like that's the point where it's like, I don't care what it costs. Like, we just need to buy you out so we can move on from this.
Well, that's when the Thunder raise their hand and say, hey, just dump this contract onto our team and we'll take more assets from you.
I guess. At that point, I'd rather just buy him out. Can we talk about the Raphael Stone press conference real quick?
Yeah, it's a good transition. Yeah.
Okay, definitely. So he did a virtual media availability. He talked about the Harden trade, and then he talked about them going forward. And why this is relevant, of course, is because we have their future picks. So I think it's important, even besides my obsession with the Rockets, it's important to like keep up to date on what the Rockets are thinking. Because because I do think it's a question. Like, are they going to go full tank, which I would argue makes sense given that they own their pick the next two seasons, or are they going to try to do kind of what Daryl Morey did that whole time and try to, you know, retool as they eventually wait for some big fish? So he said...
Yeah. Hold on, I just have to say something real quick on what? The Daryl Morey keeping things afloat stuff. He gets praised so much for that crap.
And he did it!
I'm sorry, but like, yeah, he ended up taking advantage of the Thunder, who didn't know what they had in James Harden. Great. If that didn't, let's just say that didn't happen. Like, what's your next plan, Daryl? Like, you've had this like crappy middle of the road team. Congratulations. Good job. That's the easiest type of team to put together. Way to go. I just hate the all the praise he gets for that is just some like big time BS. All right, continue.
But I would argue that he did go for it. It's just that his stars kept getting hurt. I mean, he had T-Mac and Yao, and he was able to keep that team competitive as those guys barely played year
after
year.
I'm talking about the team, like the Kevin Martin, Luis Scola team. Like, he's right. Praised for that team, and that's nuts. Like, that's freaking crazy.
Hey, we're the ones that traded for the assets. Okay. Raphael
Stone. I
know,
but I think that's an insane compliment to him. But all right, go ahead.
So talking about the Harden deal, he said, I for sure 100% would do that deal again. Again, you guys don't have the advantages of knowing everything I know, but literally no part of me regrets doing that deal. I have not second-guessed it for a moment. Which I thought that was interesting that he said you don't have the advantages of knowing everything I know. I wonder if that means Tillman would not let me trade with the Sixers.
Like, right.
It was literally the only thing I could do.
Honestly, it better mean that.
That's kind of what I think that meant. But who knows?
It absolutely better mean that, because that the trade looks worse and worse each day.
So then talking about all the picks they got from the Harden trade, he said, the Harden trade has allowed us to say, hey, we want to compete on a slightly quicker time frame. We're not going to go down this path of intentionally trying to lose games for years on end. He would like to use the picks to build around a young core that they really like, which is Christian Wood, Kevin Porter Jr., Jae'Sean Tate, and KJ Martin. In terms of how we go from here, I feel pretty comfortable. We like where we are in the beginning stages. We're going to take constant bets. I don't think we need to do like a wholesale tank strategy like some other teams have done in the past or maybe are doing now. Shots fired! First of all, you rarely hear GMs use the word tank. Like, openly, even though he's talking about it, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, publicly, they don't say that word. Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought it was just interesting. We'll see, because again, they own their next two picks in the next two drafts. I think that is the best way to go about it. They seem to be suggesting, like, that is not on our minds right now. We're going to try to be good, which sounds like, for the Thunder's perspective, this sounds like one of those teams that's just going to be bad.
Absolutely.
Like,
when
we talk about tanking teams versus teams that are just terrible, like, this is the type of plan, because there is no, I mean, that core that I just read off, that quote unquote core, Christian Wood, Kevin Porter Jr., Jae'Sean Tate, KJ Martin, like, that's not a core. Like, Christian Wood is good. Kevin Porter Jr. may be good. The other two are exciting 25-year-olds.
Yeah, it'd be like calling what the Thunder rolled out on Monday the core.
Right.
You know? It's like there's some like nice pieces there, like some potential stuff with a lot of those guys, but like that's not a core of a team you want to build around.
We're happy with our core. So anyways, I thought those were just some interesting quotes, because going forward, it's relevant how Houston decides to build their team for the Thunder. Because those picks in, 24 and 26, they're going to be a direct result of how Houston chooses to play these next 2 years. And I'm more worried about them going full-scale tank 2 years in a row. I mean, especially if they get if they keep their pick this year. But if they add like two to three blue chippers on this team in the next couple of years, now all of a sudden I'm getting worried about those picks in 24 and 26. Whereas if they're more of the mind of, we're just going to keep chugging along, build around this core, bring in more young guys, I'm less confident that that's going to lead to like a playoff team by 2024. We'll see. They can always hit the jackpot in the draft. so you don't know. And they have a ton of picks coming up. Like, even this year, they're going to have more picks, likely more first-round picks than the Thunder, because they have the Blazers pick, and I think they have Brooklyn's pick, and then they're going to have either their own pick or Miami's pick. If they land their own pick and then have those three total picks, like, that's yes. going to be huge for their franchise.
That's when you have an actual core.
Yes.
That you can talk about.
And it will be all people who are currently not on the team.
Right. Yes.
Because, like, exactly. At that point, it's like, what are we doing with Christian Wood? Like, he's only on a three-year deal. He only has 2 years left after this. I think he's 25 or 26. Like, that's the point where I could all, if they really did, if they landed, like, someone like Cade, I could almost see them moving Christian Wood at the deadline next year when he has a year and a half left, because they could probably get something for him at that point and then really build around your true core.
Yeah. Or they may keep him around, because, like, that would actually be, like, a pretty nice pairing. Those two.
Yeah, true. Which, speaking of pairings, Andrew, we watched some hoops last night, didn't we?
We did watch some hoops.
Only one of the games for me.
Some big-time prospects. You didn't watch any of the Gonzaga game?
No, I watched the Gonzaga game. I didn't watch the Michigan game.
Oh, you didn't watch the Michigan game. Okay, good. Man, there's a lot of guys on both teams that you're like, okay, like, they could play in the NBA right now. Like, put them on this team right now. Is there any guy you felt strongly about after watching?
Well, obviously I was focusing mostly on the two main guys. And what I've watched more of Mobley, so I'm not going to get too crazy about one game. But the way that Timmy, like, took him in the post so often, and it was almost like Timmy was playing against someone who was 6'6". Like, Mobley's length did not bother him at all. There was a play where Timmy was, like, backed up against him around the free throw line and just threw a pass, like, over Mobley's head almost. It's like, isn't Mobley huge? Why is his size not mattering at all? And it was the same for Isaiah Mobley, too. Like, their length did not matter for Timmy whatsoever. And I don't know if that's just because he's so crafty or if that speaks to some larger issue. I think the common, you know, fear I've heard about with Mobley is just his overall frame and lack of size. And I did see a few moments last night where, like, box out opportunities and there'd be some wing for Gonzaga that was just, like, pushing Mobley out of the way.
Yeah.
So I do kind of get worried about that, even recognizing that he brings some things to that position that you just don't see.
Yeah. I mean, he will benefit a ton from NBA strength and conditioning.
Right.
And it will take time for him. But, like, he just has skills at that size you can't teach. Like, Timmy's a pretty fun player. He's super physical. And he's, like, a man, right?
He's definitely a man.
And Evan Mobley's, like, clearly just a teenage boy, right? Out there just kind of figuring out what he is. And he's been really good. I mean, to help take a team that far in the tournament at that age is really hard. There's been a ton of NBA prospects that have not been able to do anything in the tournament. Even guys that haven't even been able to get their team to the tournament.
Right.
And Mobley's been, like, the key piece for them. So you have to give him credit there. And just the versatility that he has, though. I mean, it's, to me, outside of Cade, he's the one that I'm just like, if you put him on a team with Shea and with Poku, like, you just have the weirdest team and, like, kind of the most, maybe the most fun young team in the league, period.
And then on the other side with Suggs, I mean, honestly, the most impressive thing about Suggs is that as a freshman, he came into this super veteran team and fit right in. And when projecting forward and thinking about guys that have a chance to come into the league and immediately contribute in a positive way, like, that is some really good evidence for that, for Suggs. The fact that he did not need to dominate the game, and it didn't bother him that he was not dominating the game. Like, he plays his role, and he's very good at it, and he's playing at a very high level. But he's not like you see with some of these guys where they go to the schools and they're clearly like the number one guy and everything revolves around them. He's already fit in a system of a really good team that plays in a way that's closer to the NBA than some of these other games I've watched of these college teams.
Yeah. And he's so good. I think he's going to be a star. I mean, he can really, really pass. And he sees the game at a different level than almost anybody in college. And so he would be great next to Shea, honestly. And with everything you just said, like, he's willing to fit in. He can. He's not just a guy that has to have the ball in his hands. Like, he can do lots of different stuff. And Shea's the same way. And you put those two guys, if those are your guards, like, that's pretty great. Like, I think you're on your way to having a really, really nice team.
And I thought the thing that stuck out last night was some of these passes that he had, specifically like some really tight window in transition, but it was still very crowded passes to guys who were running down that were really impressive to me. And then I guess the other guy who's probably going to go in the lottery was Corey Kispert. Which,
yeah, for sure.
I'm willing to buy into Kispert, but I just question whether that's really who a team like the Thunder should be targeting. I mean, he's already 22, and like, is that that would make more sense for a team that's like ready to compete, I guess.
Yeah. Doesn't he fit the mold of the guys that Sam has gotten recently, though?
In terms of just being like. Skilled shooter.
Skilled shooter, a little older. Yeah.
Yeah, I just take...
He would play for... I am really surprised at you, Alex.
Why?
I'm really surprised.
You know that I don't like old guys. It's like my biggest pet peeve.
I know. But I just watch him and think, oh my gosh, like that's a Mark Degnault guy.
We have so like, many of them.
That's a Mark Degnault player. I know, but he has a... I don't know how good... any of the guys we have now really are. Like, I think he will be really good in the league. And that's why I think like that's a Degnault guy. Like that's what I thought the whole time watching him yesterday.
See, I just
like that's a Mark Degnault player.
I feel like Sam I agree that he has been targeting, especially compared to the past, more like skills, more shooters than athleticism. But he also has not had a top draft pick in a long time. So I'll be interested to see if that changes depending on where he is in the draft. I kind of get taking Teo in the second round. And Poku's kind of like a mix of those because he's like a very skilled guy. Maybe he's a shooter, but he's also like a total home run swing, which is more in line with what Sam would normally do.
Yeah, I don't think the Thunder would take Kispert, but I just think of him as like he could be thrown onto this Thunder team now.
Oh, for sure.
Like hey, fit in.
When the season's like over, bring him over for a 10-day. Give him a 10-day. Let's see what he can do.
Yeah, like he would average probably 7 threes a game for OKC. He would be, to me, I would love to have him, let's say the Rockets pick pans out and the Thunder have their own pick at like 8. Like he would, where you get to like take your swing at a top five guy, and then you take Corey. I mean, I think he fits in. I don't know why you hate that. What is wrong with you? Why do you? You just have lights out shooters around Shea, Dort, and whoever the other guy is, right? Why do you hate that? Why are you acting like because he's old?
Yeah,
that's the only reason.
Yeah, because we've talked about before, Hank. Hank doesn't like this opinion. He's 14 years old, which is very old for a dog. I'm gonna have to.
I know.
Him.
I was gonna say.
Oh my gosh.
I was gonna say Hank is a huge Corey Kispert guy.
But like, he would come in and be one of the oldest players on the team. And I know that you don't care about age, but we went back and looked. You don't.
I know.
You don't. You would.
I do care about age.
You would draft a 26-year-old if you could. We went back and looked at the last 10 drafts.
I just specifically like Kispert. It's a very specific liking.
And when I went back and looked at the last 10 drafts, the only players who became really good who were over the age of like 21, it wasn't even like a crazy number, were all guards. It was CJ, Dame, Steph.
Mm-hmm.
Like the older players who play the wing, forward, center positions... Like, they have not turned out.
I know. I understand.
And so you're asking me to take a big leap right here, and I don't want to do it.
I know. You'd rather go for Keon Johnson?
Yeah, whoever the youngest player in the draft is. Whoever the player is that has 5 years of development behind Cody Kispert, just waiting.
Moses Moody?
Sure. Like, especially on this Thunder team, you're bringing in a guy. In fact, Andrew, he's going to be 23 because his birthday is, oh no, he just turned 22.
He just turned 22.
Yeah, March 3rd. Okay.
Shea's age. Yeah.
Yeah, Shea's age. Who's had 3 years of NBA experience. Listen, I'm fine with taking those guys later in the first round. Mid to late first round, I'll do it. You know?
I know.
But for a,
I get
for
it.
A rebuilding
I just
team,
could not help but watch and think he would fit this system incredibly. That's all.
Well, hopefully he ends up on another team where he'll get that opportunity.
I don't know. I just think Mark would know exactly how to use him. That's all.
I'm ageist. I'm ageist when it comes to guys who are 22 years old.
I know. Someone said TTAM12 says I'm trying to draft the new Jimmer. He's not the new Jimmer. Come on.
I don't know.
He's a role player.
Prove it, Andrew.
He's a role player. He is a role player. Like Jimmer, like the thing with Jimmer is like Jimmer had to be able to get his shot off against guys. He didn't have the burst of speed. He didn't have good enough size. Like Kispert didn't have that problem. He's going to be spot up. He can attack or close out. I don't know. He can really, really shoot it. All of a sudden, just Thunder fans hate shooting.
Wait, Drew Timmy is 2 years younger than Kispert? I didn't realize. I thought Drew Timmy was like the oldest basketball player I'd ever seen playing in college.
He looks like the oldest basketball player in college, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's only 20.
Gosh, you love him. You would take him in the top 8.
I'd take him in the top 5, probably.
Oh, okay, Alex, right after this break, we're going to talk about the Thunder's future draft picks. We're going to talk about all the young guys on this team. Before we do that, let's go to the stream. We've got Miroslav in Germany. We have Hoopstalk 69 in the stream, Chad Scott all the way from OKC. We have our friend in India. I'm sorry, you're going to have to give me a pronunciation guide. I'm so sorry. WKim 14 in Sydney, Ross Patterson, Nathaniel Brown and more. We have Katie Lewis in OKC. We have Paul Chi in Jamaica again. Oh, my word. I hope you're not messing with me, Paul, because I think it's really cool that there's somebody in Jamaica listening. We have Parker in Denver, Colorado, says that Denver, Colorado is down to dunk. We have Gordy in OKC. We have Chris Meyer in Little Rock. We have Daniel in the UK. We have Reed Allen in Fort Cobb. He says, hi from Mr. Allen's class from Fort Cobb. Hello, class.
He has us up on the big screen for the kids.
He must. We have Dylan in Singapore. We've got Kev in Lacey, Washington. We have Jonathan in Louisville, Colorado. We have our friend Hermes in Greece. We have Sam in Tempe, Arizona. Let's see. Sam the Man in New Zealand. We have Falk in Denmark. We have Josh in Nashville. And we have our resident Jimmer hater, TTAM12. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you want to have a shout out, just tune in on YouTube when we go live, and you can also get a shout out. We will be back right after this quick break.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help find you a winning formula for success. You'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to The Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back from that quick break. Alex, the Thunder have just an outrageous amount of draft picks, and I thought it's just good to get this number out on the pod officially. So the Thunder have what has been called 34 solid draft picks moving forward. And depending on who you read or listen to, the numbers can look a little bit different. Like Bobby Marks reports, they have 17 and 17. And that is based on the Golden State Warriors pick. And so he is assuming the Thunder will not end up with their pick. And but I think if you ask other people, they would say the Thunder have 18 and 16. 18 first-round picks, 16 second-round picks. So we'll just really watch. Obviously, we're watching to see what Golden State does, but that will determine kind of part of the final count. And then they have upwards of 37 total picks in the next seven drafts with conditions attached. So I just thought it was important to throw those numbers out. I feel very confident in saying that those are the accurate numbers with regards to the Thunder's pick totals.
Yeah, and in terms of the Warriors, I mean, they did get Steph back, so that's good.
They did?
That's good for us. I was just going to go look at the standings to see how far they are out of that spot where we could keep the pick. I do not think it's going to happen because the Warriors, they've just been a mess this season.
Well, they're in the lottery now.
They're in the lottery now. That's great. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're about about five games back of where they would need to be. So that's not happening. Okay.
It's it's very unlikely at this point that they would get there. But who knows? Things can get weird. Who knows? They can get wacky.
Jordan Poole. Jump on the hype train.
Jordan. I know. They do have a negative point differential. Which, I mean, obviously they had one last season, but it's probably been a while since they've had two consecutive years of negative point differential.
Yeah. Someone I follow on Twitter made the point, like a national person, made the point that, oh, is OKC's overdoing it with these picks. And, like, on the one hand, I sort of agree because, like, at some point, there's a limit to how many picks you can have. Obviously, there is a certain number of roster spots. They're not going to use all of these picks. But I was also thinking about what's been reported. I think it was through Forbes or like CNBC that the NBA is expecting the next television deal to be like three times what it currently is.
Three times.
And
right.
John Hamm and me were talking on Twitter yesterday, and I am starting to get very scared about the idea that we could face a point in the very near future where someone drafted in the top five could come to their fourth year, their restricted free agency year, and have a qualifying offer that's like $20 million and just say, you know what, I'm going to take this. I'm going to make $20 million for a year, and then I can do whatever I want. And how do you kind of defend against that? Well, one way is just to have a ton of picks so that you can keep bringing in high-level young talent in case that ever happens. And so I think it's important for that reason. But also, we've never seen a team accumulate this many picks. We've never seen a team with a GM as aggressive as Sam Presti. I mean, say what you want about Ainge being aggressive in terms of accumulating all those picks. He was never aggressive in terms of using those picks. The one time he was aggressive was with the failed Justice Winslow trade when they offered four picks. Like, that was the one time you heard, oh, wow, Boston's really trying to go in and consolidate some of these picks for a guy that they've targeted. But otherwise, you didn't.
Well, and Kyrie Irving, too.
But not barely. They gave up one pick. I mean, it's
true.
Like, even that. Like, I'm talking about, like, really using picks, like, overwhelming teams with the number of picks, which I do think that Justice Winslow deal was, and it's still amazing to this day that Charlotte did not take that so that they could take Frank Kaminsky. You're Cody Kispert. Same guy.
Oh, come on.
who was older at the time of the draft? We don't know. It's a question.
Corey, not Cody. Even disrespecting him. That's the ultimate disrespect, is calling him the wrong name.
How much I don't want him on the team. I think that we cannot judge right now, because already, even with all of these picks, you would assume that a team that has that many picks would not have very many people on the roster that you would want to keep. You know, you would assume that they would be in like a Houston Rockets like scenario, and there would be like maybe one young guy that you're super excited about. That's not the case in Oklahoma City. So
they got lots of guys.
They have lots of guys. They have lots of picks coming up. So much more flexibility than maybe any team in history when you factor in the cap sheet as well. They can literally do anything they want. So I'm just interested to see what happens. I really want to see what happens in this draft. Does he make a crazy offer?
Oh, my gosh.
Because we've talked about it's nearly impossible to move in the top five. But do they make a type of Godfather offer in the way that Boston did for Justice Winslow? I think that was like the ninth pick or something at the time. Because you can get those picks. We've seen that happen. I mean, the Trailblazers traded two firsts to move up to get Zach Collins at number 10. Like, those type of deals in that like 6 to 14 range do happen.
Well, and we just don't know what situations are going to be at hand. Let's say the Thunder don't get a top five pick. They have 8 and whatever the other pick is. What if Cleveland's at 5 and Suggs is the guy who drops? Are they going to put Jalen Suggs on that team? Then you call them and say, hey, we'll give you 8 and we'll give you 3 first rounders.
Yeah.
Like, they have to say yes.
They have to.
They would be very stupid not to say yes.
Yeah, right? No.
And for the Thunder, it's like, hey, doesn't matter. We still have 14 first round picks.
Right.
So who cares?
You know? I'm hoping we see that as soon as this draft, and I think we will.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny when people say like, oh, this is just too many picks. It's like, it would be like me telling one of our rich friends, like, too much money, man. Stop making money. You should, at some point, you have to stop making money.
That's what
money,
we say to the L-man.
Right? That's what we have to tell L-man all the time. Like, bro, stop making so much money. No, it's this. Everybody talks about, you complain about like small markets. Oh, like they don't have the tools to get to, you know, to compete. They don't have this, like they don't have that. Like these small markets will never compete with the Lakers and, you know, now the Nets and all this stuff. And then it's like, okay, a small market figures out an advantage, and that is the draft. That is accumulating draft picks. And now it's like, oh, well, that's too many.
Yeah.
What? Like, this is like the only way they can get an advantage. Like, how you can't talk about like both sides and then say like, oh, there comes a point where there's too many. Like, no, like that it doesn't, because the Thunder have to do so much to counterbalance the fact that they don't live in a big market.
Yeah, and again, maybe the argument would make more sense if there was no one on this roster, but it's like they're doing both. Like, they're accumulating assets, picks, but they're also accumulating young guys that might have a chance to stick in the league. So it's not like they're tearing it down in the way that the Sixers did, where, you know, there are a handful of guys that came out of that process, but most of the guys that were on that roster were never good. And the lineups that were thrown out on the floor every night were a bunch of guys that were never going to play in the NBA.
Yeah, without a doubt. And they didn't have Shea. Like, they didn't have a player the level of Shea. They didn't really even have a player the level of Dort. So, come on.
Come on!
It's crazy.
All right. Move on.
Let's move on. Let's do our young player
draft. Oh, okay. Young player draft. Andrew wanted to know what my thoughts were on the current young players. I said, what are your thoughts, buddy? So we're going to do a Thunder guy draft. So these are only guys who are 23 and under. Does Corey Kispert make the cut? Oh, just makes the cut.
Yes, he does. Stop it. He would absolutely be on this list. Give me a break.
Okay, so because Shea is obviously the crown jewel, we're not going to draft him. We both get Shea. We get alternate versions of Shea, perhaps.
Okay.
Now we have to decide who goes first. Let's see. How about I'll let you go first because I'm so nice.
Okay.
And that way, if I lose, I have an excuse. So you're not picking. You're not trying to build the best team, Andrew. Okay. You're not trying to build the best five-man or six-man unit. You're just trying to accumulate the best players that you have, like you feel the best about going forward. Okay. The guys that you believe in, the guys that could become big guys in the league. So who are you taking number one?
This is actually, number one is actually kind, it's yeah, a little it is. Bit tough.
I'm interested to see how you go.
I'm going to go Lu Dort. Just because he already has a definable NBA skill that would put him in the rotation on any NBA team, and that's his defense. But he has shown some stuff off the dribble this year that has kind of made me think twice about what his future could be. And then the fact that he's still willing to take threes, man, I just think that he's undeniable, and I think the Thunder have been pretty good with him on the court. And even if he's the primary ball handler, which is never an ideal situation, it's not a horrible situation. Like, the bottom dropped out, not only because the Thunder, I think, got tired against Boston, but it's because Lu Dort was off the court. So I'm going Lu. I think Lou's got a bright future ahead of him.
Congratulations to you. I was hoping you would go with Dort with your number one pick. I suspected you would go with Dort as your number one pick, leaving the door open for me to take Alexei Pokuševski, who you said that Dort already has a definable skill. I'd argue Poku has 10 definable skills. He can do everything on the court. <Does Andrew>. he's been very impressive. Now he still can't shoot great. I think he's still under 30% for the season, but it's creeping up. And just these last couple games have just been really impressive. He's doing, you know, up until this last week or even the last 2 weeks, when we would talk about positives with him, it was often like, oh, he's a little bit better on defense than I thought. Or like, ooh, he's moving the ball. He's making some good passes. And the thing that has been more interesting the last couple weeks is some of his offensive moves. He's getting to different spots on the floor. He's not just shooting threes. He's doing some other things that we just haven't seen yet. Specifically, like doing some like pull-ups from the mid-range that have been pretty interesting. Or taking guys off the dribble and doing like a finger roll at the basket. So I'm taking Poku number two because I think he has the highest ceiling of arguably anyone on this list. So that's my number two pick. And he's super young, Andrew, youngest guy on the list, so I had to take him.
Yeah, I almost took him. I almost did.
Oh, we got Danny Ainge over here. I almost took him. I almost took Poku.
No, he does have... certainly has the highest ceiling just because of his size and skill level. Dort, I think Dort has a higher ceiling than what most people think, though. I'm high on Dort. Okay, this is where it gets muddy. We're in the mud
this
now.
This is the real Welcome reason to the for mud. Doing this, to see where we are on all these guys.
Yeah. I think you got to take Théo Maledon next. Take him. Maledon. I'm taking definitely have taken the two like sure things, because I think if the exercise was like make a bet on who you think will be in the NBA in the next 7 years,
that sounds like what you're doing.
I think these two would be number one and number two, right? I mean, would you argue?
Yeah, you're gonna
that?
Have a great middle of the road team. Congrats. no upside.
I think Teo's got upside. I think he's got upside as a shooter. I think he's got upside as a playmaker. He's still really young. I mean, I like him. I think he's going to be a really nice piece. He could be a guy that ultimately doesn't start, but could be a guy that finishes games for you in spots, just because he is very solid at just about everything. Still 19. So you like that, I guess. I hate that. I wish he was older. I'm wishing he, I wish he was 23. The only reason I do like him is because he acts like that he's 23. That is true.
He's very wise.
He is. He's very wise. And he shot the ball well from three. 37% on 4.5 attempts per game as a rookie. You know, that's great. His even his like per game counting stats are pretty impressive for a rookie off the bench, second round pick. You know, almost 9 points per game, 3.5 assists, 3 boards, a steal per game. Like that's you can't ask a whole lot more than that from a second rounder. Like he's legitimately a good player.
So
and he's got good size at the point guard position too. He's not small. He's 6'4", so he can play both guard positions.
This draft is going exactly how I predicted so far. And with my fourth pick, kind of an interesting one because I tweeted the other day, like, who could you bring on this team that wouldn't look good in Mark Daigneault's system? And somebody commented Baze. And I was like, you know what? That's a it's a pretty astute observation. I would say that, like, of all these guys, Baze has probably had the most disappointing season, especially when you look at how good everyone else has been. Now, of course, he's shown flashes, but... And we haven't seen him with kind of like this new version of the Thunder where it's all young guys, which I really do want to see Baze with all these guys. So even though I'm a little down on Baze because of all of that, I'm still taking him with my second pick.
Wow. I am surprised.
I know. I knew you would be. I knew everything. I could have just explained this entire segment. You wouldn't have had to talk once because I knew what you would do.
We podcast too much together.
I'm still going with Baze because I look at the other names on this list and I still think he has a higher ceiling than any of those guys. And the other guys feel more replaceable. Like I could get someone else who does similar things in the league pretty easily. Whereas there's an argument to be made that we've seen enough flashes from Baze where it's still a good bet going forward. Again, still very young, of course. And I am really excited. I'm hoping he comes back. I mean, there's no reason why they would sit Baze out the way they sit Horford. So assuming whenever he gets over this injury, he will be back at some point this season, right? So right now, I have a wing forward rotation of Poku and Baze. Get ready, Andrew. We're securing that top five pick.
He still has a lot of potential. He's still very young. He still has limited exposure to competitive basketball. So give him time. He needs some time. And having a 3-4, like that's
so
great.
So now it gets dicey.
That's great.
Who are you?
It's been it's been dicey for a minute, Alex. Let's not sugarcoat this. It's extremely dicey. I am going to take this is like the most like 34-year-old ever. Because I have to take like things, guys that have definable skills that I feel like could be in the NBA in a few years, and he might be on this on the 7-year list as well.
I was hoping to steal him.
I can't believe you would even I would think that you would have thrown Ty Jerome in the trash can by now, Alex. He's 23 years old. He barely makes this, even qualifies to be on this list. I mean, he's closer to death than he is to the like being a good draft prospect. So like, why even take a look at him? No, Ty Jerome's been surprisingly good, super skilled. He's definitely a Daigneault player. Almost 5 threes per game, 45% on the season. Let me look at what his totals are because he takes a lot of shots. He's very aggressive with taking shots. He's taken 69 threes on the season. Nice. Super dope. Nice. super dope. And he hadn't played that many games for the Thunder. He's been good and he can really pass it. He's a decent rebounder at the guard position. He can play both guard positions because he is that skilled and he's got good enough size. Only thing going against him is that he probably has osteoporosis because of his age. But other than that,
Now, if I had taken Ty Jerome, because I considered this, if I had taken Ty Jerome fourth, would you have taken Bays fifth?
I think you have to.
You have to as well. Okay, well, then I made the right decision.
Yeah.
That's what it came down to for me. And even though, I mean, Ty Jerome's one of my favorite players on this team, age notwithstanding, I still felt like I had to go Bays for the upside. Okay, so this is where it gets interesting, Andrew. I'm just going to keep saying that after every two picks.
I was going to say, it really what you're saying is like, it gets a lot worse.
No,
here.
Being positive. Okay, this might surprise you. I don't know. I'm going to take Svi Mihailuk as my third pick. And if you listen back to our like post-Hami trade, didn't really care much for Svi. Not that I didn't like him, but it's just like, I mean, who cares? You really want me to get excited about this guy? But, you know, because I looked at his stats and it was like, he's not even shooting that well this year. Like, what is he really doing? Didn't seem like anyone on the Pistons was that upset about losing him. So I was like, I'm not going to invest that much in this guy. But seeing him over the last couple games, he does a lot more than I thought. One, he's been a pretty good shooter while he's been with the Thunder. But he's also shown some other things in his game. His handle's been a lot better than I thought. His athleticism, I mean, he had that dunk. Didn't know he did that. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I just think that going forward, you know, because it really came down to me between Svi and probably Moses Brown. It's just easier for me to project Svi having a role on like a good NBA team than it is with Moses Brown. And that's why I went with Svi over Moses. Even though I'm pretty sure Moses is younger.
Okay. Moses is, yeah, he is. Cool. I'm going to take Isaiah Roby.
Roby! Wow, that's kind of a surprise. Sell me on that.
Well, one, it's a little dicey here. Two, I think he has improved so much from the beginning of the season. And he does things that surprise me. Like he's not afraid to take the ball off the rim on the defensive end and take it full court. He did that twice in the Mavs game. And he's shown an ability to attack a closeout. He's not a great three-point shooter. He's a willing three-point shooter. He is hitting over 30% from three this season, which for a big guy, like, great. And he has shown the ability to play both big positions this season. And I think he's got enough skill on both ends to stick around in the league and be a versatile player. So I like him. I like his versatility more than anybody else left on this list. And he works super, super hard and wants to be good. And he's also picked in the draft, which I think is a helpful thing. So,
man, you put me in a really awkward position because I'm looking at these two centers, Moses Brown, Tony Bradley. Now, we're just learning about Tony Bradley, but should I really hold that against him? Because Tony Bradley, you could argue, has already established himself as like a backup center in the league. He's much bigger than Moses Brown, not in height, but like, they basically weigh the same amount, and he's 4 inches shorter than Moses. He just looks bigger on the court. Yeah. He looks more sturdy on the court.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, Andrew, kind of a surprise to myself, I think I'm going to go Tony Bradley.
Wow. I cannot believe that. That is something.
It got dicey. Okay.
Well, you just lost, but that's cool. Tony Bradley, I just don't know. It's like, actually sell me on it, because
Here's the deal.
Like, what skills do you like of Tony Bradley that make you think that like, he's the guy over even Moses?
First of all, it's not like my options are great at this point. Okay, so grade me on a curve, please.
Understood.
I didn't take him with my first pick. Well, I went back. Because, listen, when you're watching only Thunder games, you're obviously going to overrate your own players. Right? Agree.
100%. 100%
so
true. Yes.
Before that
yes,
last yes, yes. game, where Tony Bradley, by the way, shot 100% from the field, if you remember correctly.
He does that. He has a tendency to do that.
I went back and watched some highlights. Turns out he had his career high game just like a week ago with the Sixers while Embiid's been out.
Yeah.
And was it amazing? Were the highlights amazing? No, they weren't. But he looked like a very functional big. He's playing in the dunker spot on offense, on defense. He had some really nice defensive possessions. For me, it just seems like it's more likely that he ends up being a backup center in this league than Moses Brown. And that is why I'm taking him.
You are such a hater. This is unbelievable. I am really shocked at the level of hatred that you have in your heart.
Yeah, this until you're about to take Josh Hall over Moses Brown, aren't you?
No. Although I do think Josh Hall's got some legs. No, I think I'm a little surprised Moses Brown slipped this far. I don't think that it's an incorrect conclusion that we have come to, that he's toward the bottom of this list, but to snag him, I thought I was having to choose between Moses and Isaiah Roby. But it's not crazy significant, but it's also not nothing that he's one of the handful of players that's had a 2020 game for the Thunder. He can really rebound. He's got the stuff you can't teach, and that's height, length.
Disagree.
And he's way more mobile than Tony Bradley. Like you can clearly see that. He runs the floor really hard. He wants to be better. He was a five-star recruit. I've said this on like every single platform that I've been on this past week, which has been like several podcasts and on local news. But like he was a five-star recruit. He was a guy that was supposed to be here, kind of thing. And I like his attitude. He wants to win. And I cannot believe I stole him here. I feel excited about this, that I get to have the Isaiah Roby Moses Brown front court on my team. My team actually does strangely make some sense.
Defend Tony Bradley, he was a four-star recruit, which is still a lot of stars. He got recruited by North Carolina, another blue blood basketball school.
Sure.
Well, great. It looks like I am left with Josh Hall, who I am happy to select. He finally got some minutes in his last game. Double-digit score, I believe. I think he had 10 points.
10 points? Yeah, he did.
He looked...
Four turnovers.
Nope. And it looked like he could do some stuff on the court. So let's look at our teams now. So my point guard is going to be Josh Hall. I know I said we weren't making lineups, but we are.
You're not going to put Poku? Point Poku? Come on, bro.
No, he's my secondary creator. Poku? Put the ball in Josh Hall's hand, my last pick.
Not even Svi? Nope.
Josh Hall, okay. Svi at shooting guard, Poku at the three, Baze at the four, Tony Bradley at the five. That is a team that can lock you in to a top five pick.
Is that the goal?
Is that the goal? I guess I missed the point. But you're right. They absolutely would. Oh, they would turn the ball over 27 times a game. I mean, easily. Okay, my team is Théo Maledon, Ty Jerome, Lou Dort, Isaiah Roby, and Moses Brown. Should we do a poll on Twitter?
Get destroyed. No,
we have to now. I listen. I spend every Friday morning getting just completely demolished about my NBA intelligence on Slam.
If I had known, I would have just taken Moses because he's such a fan favorite. I would have won easily.
I know. You were setting yourself up for like all the fan faves.
I zigged,
and then zagged. You fell flat.
Disagree. my team has a lot of upside, and your team doesn't. Your team has a good floor, but very low ceiling.
We have a very solid floor. Yeah. Yeah.
My team, the ceilings are like incredibly high. Can't even see them.
And the floor, yeah, the floor is an endless bottom.
It's the tallest room in the world. Oh. Your team's in a little crawl space because the ceiling's so small.
We're in a crawl space, but we feel cozy in our little in our little crawl space. I think this exercise is kind of interesting though, because we don't even include Shay, which is he's obviously worth all of these guys plus more, all put together. But there, to look at some of the guys I have, like certainly like you have like the Poku and Baze guys who are developing, and if either one of those guys hit, that's a very valuable player. And then you could argue that they've already hit on Lu Dort and Teo already. And you could see those guys being on this team for the foreseeable future and contributing. And then the other guys, like even a Ty Jerome, like I think Ty can obviously he can shoot it, but is he a guy that you can play on a really good team? I don't know. Are any of the rest of these guys, like Svi is the same conversation. Like, can you play him on a really good team? I mean, I have no idea. And then maybe even if one of like Isaiah Roby, Moses Brown, Tony Bradley pan out as like your third like center, like that's even a good situation. So they've already done a good job, and this is year one of this rebuild. It's great. It's a great situation. They've put themselves in a really good spot with regards to not only picks that we discussed before, but also players that they have.
And the crazy thing is that they're developing. In about 4 months, there will likely be three guys on this roster who we think of as highly as we currently think of, like, Teo. Three
Without
more
a
of
doubt.
Those guys.
Yes. Three.
So just shift everyone down question. And put in those three picks, like, right around Teo.
Yeah. Yeah. We won't be talking about Josh Hall in our next draft.
We probably won't.
Next season.
We'll see.
All right. Thanks for joining us on today's episode. Make sure that you follow Alex on Twitter at AlBabyCakes. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew K. Schlecht. Have a great Wednesday. Enjoy the day. And we will talk to you guys again on Friday.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help find you a winning formula for success. You'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to The Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.